And I'm not really sure after Harold's talk whether I should buy a lottery ticket or give the Gettysburg Address. I'm really not sure. But I'm pretty sure you won't hear the Gettysburg Address up here. I am going to drill down a little bit, and Harold alluded to it in a couple of his slides, I think quite well, setting the context for looking at the epidemiology of your epidemics with much more geographic granularity. So I'm going to do some of that in covering the topic today. I'm going to look at some national trends, certainly going to drill down to the geography, at least at the U.S. level, to begin to demonstrate how targeting and prioritization by geography, as well as by risk groups, can be done at the national level. I'm going to talk a little bit about some emergent resistance in GC that makes this potentially a higher priority item for us. I'm going to look at a couple of examples from the field, certainly not meant to be exhaustive, and I will apologize in advance if I've missed a great intervention that you're doing that didn't show up in the documents that Kevin and I reviewed. And then maybe a few take-home messages from this that I think follow on to a number of messages we've heard at the conference this year. Basically, how do we make program and science work together to better serve our populations? First, a little look at national trends, and it's always important to think about historic context, or hysteric context, depending on who you're listening to. But certainly, historic context for gonorrhea is that we are in a, I would say, a good epidemiologic moment with respect to gonorrhea rates. And you can really see from this trend chart that we've experienced incredible declines in gonorrhea rates overall in the United States. Certainly, in 1971, when we began the National Gonorrhea Control Program, we really reaped some benefits from that, but we may have also been just reaping the biomedical model benefits in much greater treatment efficacy. And in the most recent time period, if we look in the last decade, we've sort of been bouncing along the bottom of trend here, and there hasn't been a great deal of change either up or down. And when we drill in and look at that a little more closely, we really are in an era of fairly stable GC rates and declining overall in the last decade, which again suggests to us that we're in a moment where we may have significant impacts on future gonorrhea incidents with our interventions. Now, when we break that out by males and females, there's something interesting going on here, and that might be counterintuitive from some of you, especially those from large metropolitan areas or from the West Coast, that our female rates are higher than our male rates. Well, that's unexpected because of the component of MSM contributing to GC rates overall. You would almost expect to see higher rates among males than females, but this certainly reflects that we're doing a lot more screening, so we're probably identifying a fair number of asymptomatic cases in the population. And Harold also looked at, well, you glossed over a little bit, rates among African Americans or the disparities that we're seeing, and the greatest health inequalities of any disease or condition that we've been able to look at are among African Americans versus their white counterparts for gonorrhea incidence. But yet the shape of the trend in the last decade looks very similar to the shape of the trend for the general population. But we see something a little different when we look at African Americans by gender. We don't see that same phenomena of higher female cases being identified for asymptomatic infections in screening settings. So this suggests to us that potentially we have some work to do in screening among minority populations. Location, location, location. I think we're hearing a lot about geography, and I'm certainly going to cover. These maps are slightly different than the ones that Harold showed in that the categorization by rate is broken out differently. When we look at the maps that are in our annual morbidity report, we look at those that are above 19 per 100,000 cases, those that are below, in keeping with the 2010 potentially unrealistic targets for GC incidence. And this is looking at gonorrhea incidence by county in 2010. And something should immediately jump out to you, that really we're looking at a concentrated epidemic, and there are just a small number of geographically contiguous areas that seem to have persistently high morbidity. When we look at that among African Americans, though, what we see is there's quite a bit of difference in the geographic areas affected, and it's much more dispersed. So the high incidence rates that we see among African Americans are problematic in many more geographic areas. So that tells us that we can't just look at our overall rates of GC by county for allocation of resources at the federal level, because that might miss some important work that we need to do with respect to inequalities and disease incidence. Well, Healthy People 2020 gave us a set of potentially more realistic targets to reach with respect to gonorrhea rates, and in particular for females 15 to 44, 257 cases per 100,000, and for males slightly lower at 198 per 100,000. Well, where are we by county when we look at that Healthy People 2020 objective, which is really what we want to be doing, is looking forward. And when we look at incidence among males by county in 2011, and these are using provisional data, so these data have not been published yet, what you see is the darker color represents those counties that don't yet meet that target for Healthy People 2020, and the lighter counties currently do. So we have two things we need to do. We need to work in the counties that don't yet meet that target for males, and we need to make sure that we continue to do whatever it is we are doing in terms of interventions to make sure that we keep cases low in the areas that already meet the target. Well, how does that look for females? It's not quite as optimistic a picture for females. When we compare the males and the females, we have some work to do to meet our target among females. And looking at that again by the racial group where we see the greatest inequality, when we look at females by county and whether or not they currently meet or exceed the Healthy People 2020 target, it's much more dispersed. So we really do have a lot of work to do in a lot of jurisdictions. For males, the same is true. Now, the maps that I've been showing, and many of you who know me know that I'm just in love with maps, because I really think they can tell a story for us. And, you know, maps always draw our eye almost immediately to where we are, and that's what they're meant to do today. Well, now moving on to something that I think is a little frightening to folks, and perhaps incautiously I use the term superbug here, but clearly gonorrhea is something we don't want anymore. You know, now for those of us who will give the Gettysburg Address, we probably don't need to worry about it, but this is of concern because we're now at historic lows in terms of the national trends in gonorrhea incidence, and anything that changes that in terms of efficacy of treatment would be of great concern, because we could certainly see explosive reemergence of gonorrhea at very high levels in the population. This is a chart that I borrowed, and thank you very much, to Bob Kirkcaldy in our gonococcal isolate surveillance project. And what this shows us is in 2009 and 2010, we saw a much larger proportion of isolates that had reduced susceptibility to cefixime, which was the single dose treatment of preference during that time period. And this is concerning to us. We do not have treatment failure. We don't have any evidence of clinical treatment failure at this point in time, but it certainly bears watching given the history of this bug. And again, looking at the trends over time, what we see is that a greater proportion of isolates in 2010 are showing increased levels of decreased susceptibility. So this is meant to be a quick overview of some programs that have used what I think is very good epi and very good science in their program strategies. But where do we start with this, and how do we know about this? The program and training branch began a series of meetings in all 10 of the public health regions in 2009, and the purpose of these meetings, in conjunction with the Infertility Prevention Project meetings, was to review GC epidemiology and for the first time ask all of the jurisdictions within that region to look at their data in similar ways, to objectively assess their current control efforts, and then maybe to consider some new activities or identify priorities. The sites were all asked to develop action plans and to identify those populations that were most heavily impacted, and also those geographic areas, so that we're beginning the process of bringing the science together to then help strategize programs. That conversation was all about, how do we reallocate? How do we do something different to begin to impact this epidemic. And that means looking at new interventions, looking at the mix of interventions we have in various areas. And we also have a number of jurisdictions that are collecting additional information. With this highly concentrated epidemic, in some cases we have much better information behaviorally as well as geographically. And some of that is as a result of sentinel surveillance infrastructures that we've done through CDC funding. And then also some of that is because there's a great deal of local interest in GC in many jurisdictions, because GC is concentrated enough potentially to actually have an impact in a way that some of the more broadly generalized epidemics, we don't often see the outcomes of our interventions. And then to really look at the mix, and again, thinking it's a mix of interventions. It's not a single program. It's not a single type of intervention, but it's a mix that's most likely to be useful. A few highlights from the field. Well, certainly taking advantage of new tools and geographic information systems, a lot of areas are beginning to better target their interventions geographically. And New York State, I thought, had a very sophisticated and I think incredibly useful way of looking at their morbidity in terms of, and you'll recognize this terminology, core, peripheral, and adjacent, and really saying, does it make sense for us to be doing partner services across all of our areas, or should we be targeting areas of core morbidity and doing our partner services most intensely in those areas with the highest morbidity, and then moving outward from there to adjacent areas, and finally, where resources were left over, and resources are always an issue, looking at those areas that were very peripheral in terms of their contribution to overall morbidity. And you can develop some really nice, again, maps, being a MAPO file or a GIS file. These maps are always inherently useful, and this can be used by a DIS in the field to better understand what kind of intensity of an intervention might be delivered in a particular geographic area. Washington, D.C. Looked at their data and said, 15 to 19-year-olds, that's where our morbidity is. We should not be doing screening outside of that group. And they also looked at a web-based campaign to promote condom use, and I think the tools are really kind of cool. So if you have an opportunity, the D.C. Department of Health's website links directly to these external websites, which have some great programmatic messages to enhance condom use. Our colleagues in San Francisco, Kyle Bernstein, I think, is in the room today, looked at what proportion of infections would be missed, especially among MSM, if we were only screening at urethral anatomic sites. Their data demonstrated that a significant proportion, in fact, a majority of morbidity would be missed if you were only peeing in a cup. So they put together a program they called their Rectal Infections Project, RIP, which I really like. And what that really was is that clinicians would be evaluating patients for their eligibility for this. They would be referred for motivational interviewing approach. And what's really nice here is none of these tools in and of themselves are particularly novel, but the way they're being concentrated and targeted on a particular population is very useful. So it's all about client-centered counseling with those folks, traditional HIV counseling, and then encouragement to return for repeats screening. Of 278 patients in their pilot project, 160 of them, so about half of them actually returned for screening. Unfortunately, a third of them, 31%, were reinfected at the rectal site, and there were 10 new HIV infections identified in that group, which I think actually is a double payoff, because those are folks that may or may not have been screened for HIV elsewhere. In Washington State, responding to the fact that no one wants gonorrhea that's uncurable, got to think, most of our testing for gonorrhea now is NAT-based, so we really wouldn't be able to see some of the emergent trends other than the GISP infrastructure, which looks mostly at males. So what could we do to enhance culture capacity or to reestablish culture capacity at local health jurisdictions? It was universally decided that the incubators that had been collecting dust in the basement were no longer useful, and that we needed to find a way in the field to respond very quickly to the need to culture a patient that potentially was a treatment failure. So they purchased a new transport media, made that available to local health jurisdictions, and worked with our reference laboratory in Seattle to make sure that we had surge capacity in the event that we began to see either very increased mics to cephalosporins or any treatment failures that might have been reported. Our colleagues in the Virginia Department of Health have been very sophisticated in their use of GIS over the last decade. And, you know, what I find really interesting here is they've partnered with local health jurisdictions, in this example with Richmond City Health District, not only looking at STD rates, but they worked with the city for placement of new community resource centers. So what's very interesting there is they're building a partnership with the city. The city wants to build resource centers that are not necessarily focused on STDs, but they managed to work with the city health department to look at STD rates as one of the markers for neighborhoods at great risk for other things as well. In Philadelphia Department of Health, taking advantage of some recent innovations and permissiveness in matching HIV and STD registries, looked at their cases in what we would call a PIXI perspective, and they determined that males with two or more adolescent episodes of GC, now remembering that most of our GC is concentrated in young people anyway, this is fairly important, that these folks were at much higher relative risk for subsequent HIV infection. So from the standpoint of targeting your resources for HIV prevention, this is a group to work with. Something else they did, which is kind of interesting here because they're bringing in the provider community, they reviewed their cases and the case rates at the zip code and the census tract level, and they identified a zip code with really high morbidity, but they didn't have any screening there. So the question is, we don't have any screening, but we have a lot of cases. Where are they coming from? And what they found was that a particular emergency department was reporting the majority of those cases. So they identified what you would say might be a screening desert, where there wasn't enough screening to identify asymptomatic infections. They worked with that emergency department and implemented a routine screening program there for persons under 26 years of age. So a few take-home messages from this. Now, this wasn't meant to be an exhaustive look. I know there are other interventions out there. But, you know, programs really do need to do more with less. Now, I heard the groans from the back of the room. I'm going to remove the word more because I don't think we can necessarily do more with less, but we can do better with less. We can take the resources that we have, we can reallocate them, and fit the interventions that we have in our toolkit to the epidemics that we have in our communities. That's really important, and that's probably the best take-home message from all of the talks here today. And we have a need for program flexibility as our epidemic changes, as the science develops around better understanding of our epidemics. We need to be able to more nimbly change our programs. And if we think about this as continuous inquiry, continuous improvement, you know, we start with an understanding of the epidemics in our community, and the better that is, the better we can do our strategic planning and fit those interventions to our epidemics. Then we need to spend some time and some thought about how do we implement and maintain the programs we have in the field, because often we are suppressing morbidity that might be nascent. If we remove those interventions, it may crop back up. And most importantly, we need to bring that information on outcomes and impacts back into our program planning cycle. There is a cast of thousands, but in particular, the folks listed on the screen, I want to acknowledge for their help in putting this presentation together. Thank you. Questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mark, could you be a little bit more specific or indicate why you think there was such dramatic reduction in gonorrhea morbidity from the 1970s to where we are today?
Well, clearly the investment in the gonorrhea control program gave us the tools to bring down morbidity. But I think we also had an expansion of treatment, an expansion of screening, an expansion of diagnosis in that era. And many of our sexually transmitted diseases have that sort of characteristic drop from the 70s through the 90s. We also had HIV, which was one of the things that made it awful to have an STD at that point in time. So I think we saw a phenomenon of behavior change that really impacted STD rates nationally.
So, Mark, thanks a lot for that lovely presentation and those beautiful maps.
Thank you.
It struck me as you were talking about the difference between sexes that African-American males have higher prevalence rates than in females. Overall, their males are a little bit lower. But if you think about it, most of the screening we're doing is in females now. And so we have lots of women are being picked up asymptomatic. And it would seem to me that if we actually had an active, proactive screening program in men, that those rates in men would go up rather considerably.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Although we do know that gonorrhea tends to present more symptomatically in males than in females.
Well, I think in the old days, wasn't it, if you go back 15, 20 years ago, that the male rates were much higher than the female rates, and that was because primarily we were picking up just the symptomatic cases. Then we instituted the gonorrhea control program. We started picking up lots more women. But now the women are really being overwhelmingly screened. Men are not being screened, perhaps in corrections institutions, Job Corps, and they're doing it there. But other than that, there's got to be a big pool of unrecognized GC out there. If we're going to do something, perhaps, in those areas, targeted areas, we probably need to think of ways to get at those asymptomatic men.
I certainly would not disagree with that. Epidemic trends that I showed were incidence cases rather than prevalent. We don't really have terrifically good estimates of GC prevalence that we could actually do this with. But what was interesting to me when I looked at the difference between the general population and African Americans in particular is it tells me that we're not doing as much screening among African American women as we are other groups in the population either. So it identified for me when I looked at those charts that we have a real gap in screening, which is not nearly as universally available as we'd like it to be for any group, but there is a disparity here as well. Thank you very much.